We'd like to take a second to thank our sponsor, Mouser Electronics. Not only does Mouser stock the world's widest selection of semiconductors and electronic components, they also offer an original content series called Empowering Innovation Together. Each month, EIT takes a deep dive into the hottest tech trends, and this month, the focus is on intelligent transportation systems. Check out podcasts, articles, infographics, videos, and more at mouser.com/empowering-innovation.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And today, what else? What else is there to talk about except the Apple event that has taken over our lives this week and has, given Sherlyn a lot of work? I'm sorry, Sherlyn. Hope you're holding up okay.
I mean, We'll talk.
It's all crazy, but the iPhone 13 was announced along with new iPads, a new Apple Watch series, not as big an upgrade cycle as I think some people were expecting, but we'll dive into all that. And we've got some other news, including a fun random announcement from Nintendo that I'm sure made a lot of Switch owners just perplexed this week. As always, if you're enjoying the Engadget Podcast, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. That's always super helpful. You can drop us a note at podcast@engadget.com. We typically broadcast live around 10 a.m. Eastern on Thursdays, so check us out on the Engadget YouTube channel for some fun times. You can see how the show is made and also ask us some live questions. So, Sherlyn, it's the iPhone 13. We thought it may not be the iPhone 13.
Well, you thought. That's a bad name. Don't put this on me. You thought. The reason I think we were expecting another model name is twofold. One, 13 tends to be avoided because it's seen as an unlucky number. Number two, this is a 12, like an S year, right? The last phone was the 12. So yeah. It's, and this actually is the more important, relevant reason, I think. The S year, meaning that usually you don't get as much of an upgrade. So if you see it from that lens, I don't know if it should surprise anyone that it's not as much of a big improvement or
this
change.
This should be called the 12S, basically, from the hardware we're looking at.
Yeah, maybe Apple thought that by bucking the trend and going for the 13 grab, right? It was like, yeah, I'm gonna grab 13's butt. We're gonna do this.
You're gonna what?
It was like, what?
Please don't. What? We live in a new culture where we're respectful of everybody, but yeah, they jumped 13, right onto 13. Yeah,
chutzpah. I don't know. I don't know what Apple was thinking with naming, whether we will never see an S model again moving forward. I can't tell you. I'm not in their brains, but yes.
So what is new with the iPhone 13? There's a new processor, of course, the A15 Bionic.
Right.
The cameras are a little better, I guess.
If we're talking about just the Mini and the iPhone 13, not the Pros, then yes, there is slight improvement to the... Well, both sensors are new. It's a dual camera system on the 13 and 13 Mini. And then the Ultra Wide got like a more serious improvement to the point where it can let in, I believe, 92% more light. So it's better for low light performance.
Yeah. The lenses are diagonal on the back now.
Yes. So there's some hardware improvements, but most of the camera changes come in the software, I want to say. So mostly, or the most significantly and notably, would be the addition of a cinematic mode. This is like what was rumored to be kind of a portrait blur effect in videos. And yeah, so, but it's actually surprisingly a lot smarter than that, right? It's using a combination of like face detection and like a bunch of AI stuff to tell what person's facing the camera when they turn around, this sort of thing, to kind of just automatically adjust the blur.
It just the focus, point. Yeah, just like a actual movie camera, right? So somebody in the foreground gets all the focus. If you turn this on, everybody in the background gets kind of like blurred a little. But what you're talking about, the intelligent aspect, if somebody looks away in the demo Apple showed here of like a Knives Out, like little thing, if the main character, the detective, looks in the background, it focuses on the people in the background. That's pretty cool. And this is all thanks to the processor. Yeah.
It's pretty smart. Yeah, exactly. Like Devendra, you were saying, it is fully due to the processor, which is why it actually can't go on to older phones. It's not a cinematic mode. It's not something that they can bring backwards to the iPhone 12 and older because it was reliant on the neural engine. It uses the A15's like new improved neural engine and it's applying all of those things in real time. What do you think? You're the movie guy.
Yeah.
And you wrote up the cinematic mode thing.
It's cool.
Did you like?
It looks really cool. It is limited because basically after they announced it, we were like, oh, this is amazing. We started looking at like their specs and the fine print. And Apple specifically says cinematic mode is limited to 1080p, 30 FPS, which is sort of like the most basic video quality level you'd shoot on an iPhone. You know, you don't get an iPhone to shoot 1080p video. So I think this is one of those things where you want to make a cool little video where you can do these cool blurs and focus effects. You will be sacrificing 4K video. You'll be sacrificing 60 FPS.
I mean, I think that's pretty reasonable. I mean, reasonable yeah. in the sense that, like, imagine the sort of bit rate and the sort of sampling it has to do to create that. Like,
no, definitely.
It probably takes a super long time at anything higher than 1080p at the moment.
Definitely. Yeah. But I'm somebody who, like, I want to make my videos a little archival, you know, so I don't go all the way to 4K 60 on my iPhone, but I do shoot in 4K 30 so that it looks there are more pixels, you know, for all my baby videos and stuff, you know, so it'll last a little longer. And like there is like more quality in there. So that's just a bit of a sacrifice. This isn't complete magic, but it looks really cool. And I think when we were talking about this before, Sherlyn, it is something I think everybody else will copy. And just like what happened with portrait mode. And we should be clear, Apple did not invent portrait mode. Yeah, that actually showed up on Android phones first. I believe it was the HTC One M7 or one of those.
With the ultra-pixel cameras?
With their cool, yeah, they were like lower resolution cameras, but they had more like bigger pixels or bigger sensors so they could bring in more light.
Right.
So they did that. The Pixel phones had something before the iPhones did, I believe, right? They had their own background blur thing.
Yeah, it was almost like all the Android phones first. It was like Samsung did their artificial bokeh where you could like, they call it selective focus and you could do behind, forward, and none at all. And then I think it was, what is that very famous camera brand that also like kind
Hasselblad?
Of teamed up? Is it Hasselblad?
Or Leica?
It's Leica, right? I think it was Leica with Huawei or something.
Yeah, they
did some sort of like adjustable focus after the fact as well. And then it came through to the Pixels and Google software after. And then I think it was Apple. So,
and then there was that the startup with like the, was it Lytro? Was it the one with the weird camera?
I think that's the one I'm thinking of.
The tube camera that I wrote about this like back in my even pre-Gadget days. But it was a camera that was basically a long cylinder. So you could, after the fact, choose whatever focal point you wanted. That never really took off as a technology. Mm-hmm. But that idea kind of came back with portrait mode and being able to like tweak your photos. But anyway, Apple did not invent portrait mode. But I do think they certainly helped to popularize it and popularized it with multiple lenses, too, because the Pixel phones were just doing one lens and, you know, software to make an artificial background or an artificial blur. There's a lot of back and forth in these things.
Yeah,
and
I
think Apple's main thing here is that, hey, we know their chips are more powerful than everybody else's. Mm-hmm. That's something they've always said. And the benchmarks always kind of make that clear. Sorry, Qualcomm, your Snapdragon, like, the benefit of Apple building their own hardware and then building the software around it and being able to like have that dance being very finely tuned, that's always going to be iPhone's advantage. So it enables features like this. It's not like I wouldn't upgrade from an iPhone 12 or even an iPhone 11 to this just for cinematic mode. But it is a nice thing to have. And I think in a year or two, we'll see it everywhere. Yeah.
Not just for cinematic mode, for sure. I will say there's a couple of other new camera features that are added with the iPhone 13, but I think the more interesting thing that people might want to consider upgrading from, say, an iPhone 11 for would be the promised improvements in battery life. Like right? Like they're promising 1.5 hours longer on the Mini than the 12 Mini, and then on 2.5 hours longer on the 13 than on the 12. So if you're on an 11, you're probably facing some kind of battery deterioration at this point. So would you enjoy upgrading to the 13? Probably. I mean, it feels like a new phone.
Having more battery life is nice. The screens are a little better, too. Like, they're nice upgrades all around, but it almost seems like Apple is, like, even Apple is aware of, like, how incremental some of this stuff is going. And I've talked to a lot of people who are like, yeah, I'll get a new iPhone when I need a new iPhone. You know, like, when my phone dies in my cold, dead hands. then I'll get to upgrade whatever the new iPhone is. So I don't, it's really only the geeks like us who are like, what is the next numbered iPhone? What are the new features? You know, what's happening? I think Apple is well aware that they're only speaking to a very vocal minority, I guess, with these events and all this stuff, because we're tech press. It's what we do. There is new 5G support, or more 5G support,
expanded.
I guess.
Expanded.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I haven't looked super closely into, like, what exactly are the new bands that are being supported. So I can't tell you, like, what this is it mid-band? Is it, like, what are you talking about? But, yeah, I mean, expanded 5G support is not something that is going to be very meaningful to a lot of people right now, I don't think. So
is it better for, like, international 5G? Because I know in America, like, we're very limited in terms of what we do. So.
Sure. Potentially. Yeah. I mean, again, I haven't looked at the bands. I need to take a bit more time to do that. I can tell you, like, I'm not traveling internationally, so I really don't give a crap right now about international support.
Well, you'll be able to go back to Singapore at some point, whenever things feel safer, you feel safe enough going,
It's more that the country needs to feel safe about me going.
I don't know. You're red labeled now.
Singapore's pretty safe.
In crazy America.
Well, not really. Yeah, the cases are on the rise. I will say, here's one good reason to consider getting the new iPhone 13. Well, not really an actual good reason, but a vain one. The new pink color is hot as shit. I can't say shit.
Whatever. I don't know. You're not going to get censored.
Shoes.
We're not censored by the FCC here. Is it hotter than the red, though? Like, I think the Apple red stuff, I bought my wife and I a red iPhone 12. What do they call it? Series red or product red?
Product red.
It's a very nice red. It's very bold. The pink is
product
fine.
Product red is really nice, yes.
Yeah.
I like the looks of the pink. I mean, I loved the green from last year. The green is very pretty. And green was like the color everybody used last time. It looks, based on pictures, like the pink will be similar to the Pixel 3 pink, but I'm not sure. It may be different, but if that's enough to get you going, you know, and you're like, oh, I'll upgrade for that new pink color, and you're not a person who uses a case. Yeah, okay, there you go. Another newness.
I don't know how, like, this year, case-free people can still exist. We are over a decade into owning smartphones and knowing these are basically fragile babies made of glass. It's like, people, just get a case. You can get a really thin case that will protect you from minor drops. Yeah. Our video producer just piped in saying he doesn't use a case, to which I say, you're a madman. Just wait. No, one drop to the sidewalk.
I've used a few Pixels in the past, and yes, whenever they drop at home and they're fine, but yes, dropping on the sidewalk is when they die. And on the Pixel 5, I still don't use a case. I have been, like, some of the iPhones that I got since having to cover Apple from after Chris Velasco, that trader, left us. I have put in cases, right? Like, because I almost feel like somehow, because they're heavier, they may be more likely to crack because the force will be stronger when
definitely,
they fall.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm still trying to go a little caseless when I'm at home, but I think when I go outside for sure, I'm going to slap a case.
Well, people keep asking me, how do I make my phone last, you know, more than 2 or 3 years? I want to take care of my device. I don't want to have to upgrade every year, or like some sort of like Apple drone. For the love of God, put a case on it. Put a $10 case on your phone and you'll be okay.
And a screen protector.
Even then, like, screen protectors are fine. It's true. You get a lot of scratches. Yeah.
I know. I found, like, a glass-like screen protector really helped me when I had, like, the iPhone 5.
That's a good
something.
Idea.
Really
made, yeah. I have a 12 Pro right now, which I don't know how, but it has, like, all these little scratches when I'm literally just sitting at home. It has not fallen. I don't know where these scratches came from. So, yeah, a screen protector would be good, too. That's it for the iPhone 13 and the Mini. Like, that's...
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. For the well, there's brighter screens, but yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's it. 13 Pro, I think, is a little more interesting because it gets that feature we've been begging for forever, which is 120 hertz Pro Motion screen. Finally. I'm so happy about that.
I'm happy for you, bro.
Yeah. I'll be happy for you because you're going to be playing around with it. But that is the thing that has been on Android phones for years now. And we've had 90 hertz Android phones, I think, for at least 3 years. So yeah, great to see Apple over there, right?
Yeah, I've realized lately, because I it might be disappointing to some of you to hear this, but I've had to like switch over to iPhone for a little bit.
Trillin's a serious mobile reporter. She has to live in both worlds.
She walks between the raindrops. Yes, there you go. Yeah, never getting wet. And definitely doing things like scrolling. And one of the things I do, and this is maybe outing a little bit of my creepy behavior, but I'm sure everyone does this too, is when you look at your Instagram stories viewer lists, and those can go on forever depending on who you are, right? Like if you're famous or popular, I don't know.
Trillin's over here still using Instagram. Wow.
Exactly.
A millennial.
Screw TikTok. Yeah. Good for you, Zoomer. Doing things like that does start to show when it's like a 60 hertz screen, right? It's just like, it doesn't stutter like as long as it's scrolling, but it does stutter like after it's been scrolling a little while. Like the rate to like catch up with what's on top of the screen, basically the rate to replace what's on top of the screen is slow enough that like you see it stutter.
It's the difference between like seeing that stutter and like if you hold a piece of paper up and you just like roll it up and down, like actually reading a newspaper is a smoother experience than reading a website on a 60 hertz phone because your eyes can keep up with like how everything is moving. That's basically it. I think that's a good way to explain it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very good upgrade. And you know, promotion can support it. It's an adaptive thing, which is like every other iteration of 120 hertz screens out there are also adaptive refresh rates screens. For Apple, it can go between 10 hertz when you're looking at a static image or not doing anything.
Nice.
And then up to 120.
That's really nice. And that is key, by the way, because some of the early Android phones were like, here's a phone that's always refreshing at a crazy high refresh rate, and it's also killing your battery because of that. So enjoy.
I don't remember the earliest iterations, whether they had that. I know that OnePlus and Samsung both did dynamic, which they're,
I think,
you know,
Razer,
their way of saying adaptive.
Was it the first Razer phone or like some of those
probably
things?
Gaming
like
where, phone, yeah,
the gaming phones were like, we're always here. But the future for phones and certainly for every device is variable refresh rates, because gamers have been talking about this, and I've talked about this like when I talk about gaming screens and whatnot. Gamers have always been about the high refresh rate, but you don't always need all those pixels. So what do you do until you actually need that, like in terms of saving power and whatnot? You make it variable so that even lower refresh rates look better. So that's essentially what's happening here. Yeah.
I think in some devices they do like either you can do 120 or you can do 60 or like you have the option to choose between the adaptive and the 60 like slower screen just to get more out of your battery when you need. I don't really know if this is an option yet on the new iPhones, but we'll see. But there's more about the pros, right? I mean, basically, like the regular 13s, they got new sensors throughout for them is a triple camera lineup. You've got down to f1.5 aperture on the main sensor.
It's really nice.
For the 13 Pro. Yeah, that is pretty big of an aperture. And then the sensor itself has pixel size of 1.9 microns, which is also pretty big. I can't remember. It's been a while since I covered cameras that in depth, but I think 1.5 microns was kind of like pretty typical before. So 1.9 is nice and big. But basically what that means is, right, it's able to let in more light. And as we all know, more light means more detail, crisper pictures, you know, because it can be, you know, faster with the lens, shutter. So yeah, all that's really great on the main. And then also on the there's the telephoto now, it's 77 millimeters, as well as, I can't really remember.
Is that longer? That was. Goes farther than before?
I believe so. And then together with the ultra wide, so the 77 millimeter telephoto allows for 3x optical zoom.
Together with
the A15, and the ultra wide, and you know, all that software magic, you're gonna get some macro photography skills, which will definitely not make your Instagram feed obnoxious in 2 weeks. definitely not. Or it can also enable, I think, up to 6x hybrid-y zoom. I saw a number there. That one I would like to confirm before I tell you for
That's
sure.
Apple's official feature name, by the way, is hybrid-y zoom.
hybrid-y zoom. I can't remember which of them. I think they all have autofocus. I'm trying to remember which lens is the one that they
shouted out. I assume they would. Autofocus. The other thing, too, is that the pros are also going to be able to do ProRes video, which is going to be a really nice thing for actual video producers, because that, you know, that's what, less compressed, give them more opportunity to actually like edit the video and tweak things. So that's nice. That's a nice feature to have. Yeah. 99% of people do not need ProRes. But if you're a producer, like there are people who are out there using iPhones as like secondary or tertiary cameras on a shoot. So if you're shooting in conjunction with like professional stuff and you want to have that editing flexibility, ProRes will be really nice. Something Fight Night 14 in our chat room also mentioned, the sensor shift image stabilization is now on the all the models. So the iPhone 13, even the, you know, the cheaper ones, the non-pros. Last year, only the 12 Pro Max got that. So I have a 12 Pro right now. I don't have that image stabilization. So that's a nice upgrade for everybody.
I haven't played around enough with sensor shift to tell you how much I like it above other features right now. I will say the 13 Pro does get all the other features we talked about, like cinematic mode, better low light, I guess photography. And yeah, I mean, look, camera, like where the cameras are at in the smartphone biz right now, I'm pretty happy. Like I can't complain. I am very intrigued to see what Google is going to do with the Pixel 6, where it promises to do all these great things with this processor, the way the A15 is powering a lot of these new features. So, I mean,
yeah,
I got asked this question a lot during our live chat on earlier this week, where like, oh, are you more excited for the Pixel 6 or you know, this guy? And I'm like, look, I'm excited for the Pixel 6. This is a big change from the Pixel 5. It looks
that's
like
a big
more
design
significant
leap. Yeah,
upgrade.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But as for their photography, like prowess and how they compare to Apple, I feel like it might be very similar. I feel like we're going to see them do very, I don't know. Maybe I'll eat my words in next month whenever Google decides to release the Pixel 6.
I don't know if Apple or if Google is taking itself in a different way than Apple is when it comes to the Pixel phones. Like, I do feel like maybe they've relegated, like, okay, the vast majority of mainstream consumers are going to go iPhone. The people who want the, like, pro-grade cameras are going to go iPhone. Who do we serve with the Pixel phone, you know?
I think they're still going after the camera people. I don't think they're looking for the pro-grade camera people, but maybe people who just want really good pictures on their phones.
Yeah.
You know, think there's also, it's really sad, I think, that the share, like Pixel's market share is so small. It's like 1.something% of the market share.
So small.
It's so sad. I feel very bad for the, yeah.
I saw during the iPhone event, the Google Nexus Twitter account tweeted out something. It was like, personally, I'm more excited for the Pixel 6. Like, oh, Nexus, we remember you. You were a nice try. You were so cute. Yeah, it's
adorable. Don't do that, guys.
It's like somebody at Google who clearly had that Twitter account still was just like, just wait for Pixel, everybody, while everyone's hyping on iPhone. Anyway, I think the ultimate thing is like, this is not a super exciting iPhone year. I'm not sure if you feel differently, Sherlyn. I've also been asked by people if they find an, like, if you find a 12, if you just wanted a normal iPhone for like, you know, yourself or for somebody in your family, and the 12s are going to be cheaper really quickly. So if you find like a 12 that's half off versus paying full price for a 13, I don't know if the 13's worth it. Go for the cheaper phone, save that money for a future upgrade.
I mean, I think that's a really good tip. But again, I will have to put the two side by side to compare before I can tell you like how serious the camera improvements might be. But yeah, I'm getting the overall feeling right now that like my review is going to be like, eh, like great. Like it's a good phone.
It's
Don't
an
get
iPhone.
Me wrong.
It's an iPhone, baby.
It's an iPhone. It's probably going to be a good phone. And I can already see our review score not being that much different from the way it's been in the past, right? Like this is kind of a prediction here. But is it good enough to upgrade, especially if the 12 is right there for the buying if you have an opportunity to get it on the cheap? I don't know. I feel like the 12 might be good enough for a lot of people who
I'm a
don't
deal hound.
Drop that kind of money.
Yeah, I'm a deal hound. So it's like when I look at like the 12 or even like the 12 Pro, if you're looking at like the Pro Max or something, I'm sure like those things will drop down in price quite a bit. So it's almost like the way cars are priced these days where, you know, if you buy a car brand new, you're paying top dollar for everything. You wait 1 year and all of a sudden it's like $10,000 less. That's how my car ended up being basically by the time I bought it. So look out for the deals, folks. You don't have to just go buy everything new, especially with phones and these things getting so expensive. Yeah.
It's almost like DaVinci should write a story about how to look out for the deals. The moon in our chat, by the way, brings up a really good point that it's so small that I really forgot. But the notches on these phones are smaller than before as well.
Sure.
They're like 20% smaller.
Sure.
But exactly, the fact that we clean forgot about it tells you just how much of an improvement that is.
It's nice that they're getting smaller. People also mentioned the 64 gigabyte phones are going away. They're all 120 gigabytes at the base. That's very good. That's a big deal. We brought that up as an issue last year. So, hey, new phones, pretty much what we expected. I think a lot of the rumors and leaks were kind of going really
because
a lot of them are probably for next year's phones, because there was right before last week, when we were talking about things, there were leaks around the 2022 iPhone that looked like a more substantial design upgrade. So, you know, get excited for that a year from now. Let's move on to some other things, because I think, weirdly enough, the thing that got me the most excited this year at the Apple event is the iPad mini, which is something I feel like even Apple has forgotten about. Like, they haven't updated that much. When they released the first one, that was back when, 2012, 2013? That was back when Android tablets, small Android tablets were a thing and were becoming very popular, like the Nexus 7 mm-hmm. and Asus had some. So it's like going back into the past year. But since then, I don't think the iPad mini has had much going for it, because the iPads got cheaper and smaller or lighter. Mm-hmm. So they became more portable, and the phones got bigger. And the iPad is like here in the middle, being like squished like a little like iPad mini sandwich. So now this latest model has a bigger 8.3 inch screen, slimmer bezels. It has the A15 Bionic. It is basically, and it starts at $499. Basically, mm-hmm. it looks like the phablet version of the iPhone 13 that I think a lot of people may want. I'm just looking at this thing being like, man, that is a good comic book reading tablet, you know, or a good like
gaming, any reading, yeah,
anything, any reading, gaming on the go. It's powerful. It can replace a Kindle in some respects. It's not, it's expensive, but not like absorbent, like not like iPad Pro levels of pricing, which I could never justify. And weirdly, this thing is more powerful and more well-equipped than the current iPad Air, which Apple has not updated this year, or at least at this point. So I'm just hyped for what I could do with this. I can imagine like throwing this in my messenger bag, walking around with it. If I want to like type up a story, work on some stuff, I'm sure there will be keyboard cases or something eventually. Like, this looks like a nice little portable folio type of device, almost like the Surface Neo that we're still waiting for. So what are you thinking on this one, Trillin?
I mean, I think this looks the same size as the Duo, first of all. So I don't think we're going to be... the Neo is probably for bigger... Anyway, I love the looks of the new Mini. I think the redesign did it a world of favors. I don't know how heavy it's going to be. I hope that the redesign didn't make it heavier than before. There's still like a bunch of bezel around the screen, which is fine, honestly. Like, for a
they're calling it edge to edge, but it is very bezely.
It's quite bezely. It's like, I forgot what bezels were, because I've been using such like thin bezel devices for a long time now, and I'm like, oh wait, no.
In my world, there are no more bezels.
In my world, there's USB-C only, and no more bezels. But
and this one is USB-C too, right? World. Like, I feel like Apple is slowly making that change. Yeah.
Well, on the iPad side of things, right? But we can talk about this forever, but no, we won't. I do like the looks of the iPad mini. I'm tempted to get one myself, too. Mm-hmm. It starts at $499, which is more expensive than, obviously, the entry-level iPad that was also announced at the event, iPad 9th generation, I believe, which starts at, like, $329. Mm-hmm. But this one has, like, pencil second-gen support. It's got that nice redesign. It's got, you know... What else is actually new about it? The Touch ID, I guess?
Touch ID. Yeah. Well, it also supports Center Stage, which is sort of, like, the front-facing
the iPad
centering.
Also does,
and the base iPad does, too. So we'll get to that. And I think that one is really... Mm-hmm. For most people, again, I've said for years, like, the base iPad is the perfect tablet for most people. I have the, like, 6th or 7th gen right now that my daughter uses as her, like... You know, YouTube, TV show watching and like video conferencing machine for her. This would even be, that would be even better if it had center stage. So I'm all hyped for that. But having that tech in the iPad mini seems really useful. Like you could take meetings on the go pretty easily, just like prop that thing up and like be outside and actually not be trapped at home to take a meeting. I don't know. There is 5G support. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that leads me right to what I was just about to say, which is my favorite thing is people in our chat and comments going like, this is literally, and Michael Brescia says, this is literally just a bigger iPhone 13 Pro Max.
Yes.
And then
yes.
also people saying that, you know, the iPad mini should just be a phone already. I mean, look,
nothing stopping
here,
you.
I don't think.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think the 5G support here is for cellular calls. Mm. I don't think iPadOS has a phone app. We got to look into it.
Can you do all just FaceTime audio calls? But then that's only FaceTime people.
You could just do VoIP.
Yeah.
Right. You could do just VoIP, which a lot of apps will allow you. So with the 5G model, you could technically take calls on it. However, what kind of monster are you if you're using that size device?
Insane.
Up on your face.
People are insane. Well, that... Because I don't even know how many people hold their phones up to their faces anymore. I remember when the first Galaxy Note came out, I was like, that looks ridiculous. But it turns out our habits moved away from doing that towards having headsets and whatever. But you got to be able to fit a phone in your pocket, people. Like, I don't know. Just give up on that idea.
I agree with you that like people aren't all holding up our phones to our faces anymore because we're using wireless earbuds or just earbuds. Mm-hmm. I still do though because I don't go around with earbuds around at home and when I'm making a call at home, I'm not plugging in. I would just put it to my
speakerphone. It's just like deal with the ambient noise, other person calling me. But no, like it is basically the 12 Pro without like all the extra cameras. There is better camera tech in the mini as well, but it's also half the price of, you know, of the 12 or the 13 Pro and the more expensive iPhone.
True.
So I think that's like a good deal overall. It is $650 with 256 gigabytes of storage, which is the one I'd probably go for.
Right. But it starts at $499.
It starts at $499, which is pretty good with 64 gigs.
Yeah.
I just like it. I just think it's nice. It's very cute. Any further thoughts? Because we should talk about the other iPads and the base one especially is a good step forward. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Let's move on to the next, the base entry-level iPad, because this guy, I mean, all I can say is it's cute. And we all know how much I love cute things.
It's cute. But if you want if you want an iPad for your kid, or you just want like a simple, you don't need all the, you want something that's bigger
bells and
too.
Whistles.
Like a 10-inch plus screen. Weirdly, you can spend less money and get a bigger iPad with the base iPad, which is bringing over, it has Pencil 1 support like last year, so not the latest Pencils. But better cameras, better battery life, I think more storage at the base model too. So, hey, it is a nice machine. And again, look out for deals, folks, because if you don't care about what they added to this one, last year's model will be an even better deal come this holiday season. Like stores are going to be trying to clear out their stock and everything. So, you know, shop smart, wait until Black Friday. I'm sure you could get something really good if you just hold out a little.
Yeah, hot tip. Also, geez, Black Friday is not that far away anymore.
Yeah.
So that's depressing.
We each just have to survive like 5 reviews until Black Friday.
Speaking of the time of year, let's talk about the time of day. No, basically another device that I know that was a very bad segue, everybody, but bear with me. The Apple Watch Series 7 is one of the other devices that was announced this week. And I don't know. I mean, again, as with basically everything else that was announced, this seemed like a very incremental upgrade. The biggest change here are the slightly bigger screens. I mean, this 20% like bigger displays themselves. The borders are like what, 40% thinner. The bezels.
The borders look like they've been obliterated basically at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, 40% is basically close to 50, which is like huge, shavings. But. But all that together allowed Apple to squeeze about 50% more text on screen when you're looking at, say, a message on your watch. So it is nice to be able to see more on your screen at once for sure. Like if you're using it to track a workout, you might potentially get to see more. Don't know yet exactly how much of the new OS or the interface that applies to in terms of squeezing in more stuff, but we know that there's new watch faces as well.
And the watch faces look like the ones that have like all the info looks like they can squeeze another line of information in there compared to even the last series.
That would be so
that's
nice. Nice.
That's nice.
Yeah, that'd be really nice. The other thing, one of the rumors that at this point I'm just going to be like, oh, it's a render. Does somebody like imagine this thing? Or maybe it's a coming
up edge
upcoming
one.
Device.
Yeah.
The flat edge render. The renders of the watches with flat edges. They basically look like shrunken down iPad minis, right? Mm. Like very, very tiny iPad minis on a strap. That's what the flat edge watch renders looked like. Yeah. And this is not. This even got a little bit curvier.
It's a little curvier. Like I think that looks a little more organic and just feels better on your wrist. Because I don't want flat points. Like right up against my skin if I'm wearing it all day. But again, that could be a 2022 update for the Apple Watch. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Like everything else, this got like a new battery life is the same, but faster charging.
If you have the USB-C cable. So you have to have that.
Which should come with, which should come in the box with this guy. We'll see. But anyway, it's supposed to get your phone from 0 to 80, your watch from 0 to 80% in 45 minutes.
Nice.
And Apple is promising 8 hours of sleep tracking with 8 minutes of charging. That is not bad if it does what it says it's going to do. So we will, a lot of these will have to see watches available later in the fall. So it's not really ready yet. Whereas everything else, you can more or less pre-order as of this Friday, the 17th. And they'll be available on the 24th, which is
I'm so tempted. I'm so tempted to just lock in that iPad mini, but I'm going to wait and see, folks, because who knows, wait for the reviews, but also wait to see like what the pricing and stuff is like in a couple months. Like maybe it'll be, you could get some nice bundles with them or other stuff. I'm waiting to see like what the accessories are. If Logitech drops a really nice like smart keyboard case for that thing, like I'm there immediately. I like the fast charging too, because it's like if you use it to track your sleep and then like you have maybe 1 hour to like shower and get dressed or something, you can drop it in the charger, give it a full like boost for the day and just move on with your life. So that is really nice, because it used to be you had to leave it on the charger for a while, for several hours to get a full charge.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I remember one time I was trying to, I thought I had enough, I had charged it enough. I put it there for maybe like 30 minutes. It got like 15 to 20. Actually, it got like almost 40%, it said. And then I was midway through a workout and it died, which is, I was very angry. I was like, it doesn't matter now. It doesn't matter now that I'm working out. The watch is not tracking it.
Yeah.
There is my day gone.
What's annoying with the Apple Watch too is that the charger is only capacitive, right? So it's only like wireless. If it's off a little bit and you lose that, like it doesn't end up charging, it's very easy to mistake that, where it's supposed to magnetically clamp on, but something can shove it. Something can happen where you think it's charging. It doesn't.
I mean, it depends, right? For me, I use the SE on the daily, the Watch SE, and I have to charge it on the daily too. And it does snap on pretty like solidly. It's pretty clear when it snaps on, and if you leave it on the surface where nothing's gonna jostle it around, you should be fine. But yeah, if someone like steps on the wire that it's, you know, attached to, you, it might come off quite easily. I don't
know. It's the downside of wireless charging. If you have kids, if you have pets, like there's so many things that could go wrong. If you get an Apple Watch, folks, invest in a stand of some kind, like a charging stand, because those are a little more secure. You can like have, and then you can like put the watch up on your nightstand or something too, if you wanted. Anything else about the Apple Watch, Sherlyn?
Honestly, it's kind of sad that I can't tell you much else, because it means that there's just not much else.
You mean there's no camera on the Apple Watch?
You know what I can tell you that I am stoked about that is related to the Apple Watch? Fitness Plus
Fitness
is getting
good.
A bunch of updates, the key of which being group workouts over SharePlay. If you recall, SharePlay is the feature that allows you to watch TV or share your screen with your friends over FaceTime. And Fitness Plus is bringing workouts, group workouts of up to 32 people that you can work out with on a FaceTime call, which I think is pretty cool. The problem for me is that there's so many prerequisites, it seems. I didn't get around to, I have to ask Apple more questions about this, because I don't know if like everyone on the call needs Fitness Plus, right? a subscription, which means that then every one of them needs to have an Apple Watch, right? Yep. Because like you need Apple Watch to use Fitness Plus. But this is an exciting feature for those of us.
You can use Fitness Plus just with the iPhone. You won't get health tracking.
Yes, you can, but you need to have the watch. Mm-hmm. You need the watch to be able to use Fitness Plus at all. I mean, to be able to access the app to begin with, they'll be like, oh, where's your, like, there needs to be an Apple Watch associated with the account. That's basically it. Anyhow, but it does seem cool. Again, this is another feature that will probably be available a little later in the fall, just because it's tied to the Apple Watch, I think. Some of the updates are coming first, like new like Pilates workouts, some new search filters. There's like these winter sports style workouts featuring Ted Ligety.
Is that a real person, or are we just like making up words now? Okay.
I know. I was like, isn't that a song title? Anyhow, Ligety is the last name for sure.
No, that's no diggity.
Like, not entirely.
Yeah.
No diggity, I know. but yeah, there is no diggity here, only Ligety. And yeah, just a bunch. Look, Fitness Plus is getting an update. The one I'm most stoked about is group workouts. And it is I've got questions, but it does seem like it could be fun, especially as we continue to hybrid our way through this pandemic world.
Have you done much Fitness Plus on the Apple TV, Sherlyn? Because for me, I've tried it a bit, but the syncing is kind of annoying, where it's like, if your Apple TV loses sync with your watch at any point, it's like, oh, I guess I'm just going to throw this workout in the trash. And I'm going to just throw away all these
stats.
That's
exactly
what I said. Yeah. They got to work on that.
Exactly. Well, so for me, I have not yet had a problem with syncing. I mean, once or twice, it'll have trouble looking for the Apple Watch in my living room. But I haven't had a major issue because I'm in such a tiny space. There's not much range to kind of distract from it. But if you're losing it in the middle of a workout, that's a huge problem. And I never have encountered that.
And then the workout stops and there's no way to like continue it from that point, and you lose all your data.
Can't.
So for this to work better, and I want to do this because I don't go to the gym, so I want to be able to do this stuff at home. Yeah, I want to be able to have faith in these things. We'll see. We'll see how this all goes. What were you expecting, anything, Sherlyn, that wasn't announced this week?
Yeah, bruh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was all but guaranteed that the AirPods 3 were going to show up. I wrote those words in our preview post. I was like, it's pretty much going to show. But the leaks were super thin. There were only like one image and like some sources talking about the AirPods 3. But I looked at the time of year. I looked at the amount of time that's passed since the last AirPods, the entry level, not the Pro, have been released. And it seemed like the time. It was
the
like
timing
the exact amount
similar.
Of time it took. Yeah, but maybe, you know, Apple has been releasing enough AirPods products in the interim that it feels like you didn't have to announce one today or this week.
I also don't know what they could do with a base AirPod model is the thing. Like, the AirPods Pro fixed all the things I wanted on the AirPod side. So it's like, you can't bring noise canceling into an open ear headphone like the AirPods. You know, you can maybe make the speakers a little bigger, maybe add more battery life. But at the same time, those things are still flying off the shelf. So it's like, there is no impetus for Apple to be like, hey, let's just do a new thing, you know?
Or like no impetus to make a cheaper one is what you're saying, because if they made a cheaper one, those would fly off the shelves harder. But some of the rumors were around like, a slight redesign, like the ANC, the active noise cancellation, and the spatial audio stuff was kind of disputed. It was like back and forth. People were saying yes or no. I wouldn't be surprised if later this year we see, you know, Apple drop them, but maybe with less fanfare. The other thing that people were expecting to see based on some of the analyst chatter is redesigned MacBook Pros. And people kept asking about new M1 chips too. And those are two things that, you know, we still got a good chunk of the year left that we might still see.
Not as much as you think, though.
I know.
It's the middle of September. Like, this is done. We're almost to CES, everybody. Like,
well, I'm not.
My life is over.
I know. I wouldn't put it past Apple to have another event. I think in the past,
definitely,
traditionally, they have another one in November, like an educational thing in Chicago in the past, like an iPad-only one. So maybe they do another event just for MacBook Pro redesign, because it seems like, if they did introduce a new chip, that they might think it warrants an event. But
that's a whole different conversation. Like, you got to talk about not just the A15 Bionic, but what's in an M1X or what is in like the next stuff.
Exactly.
So I totally get that. I think the rumors for the new AirPods were like maybe they would have some of the design of the AirPods Pro. So like that would be good. Removable tips. Like that's really all you got to add is like removable ear tips. So anybody could wear these things because I cannot at all fit a normal AirPods in my ears. But also if you basically took the basic design of the AirPods Pro and just ripped out ANC, because if you if your ears are plugged well, you don't necessarily need the noise canceling. That could easily be a pair of cheaper AirPods. They could even keep the current models around. Like I don't know if Apple would ever do this, but make those the cheaper ones. You know, because for some people those are just fine. So drop those in price and then have a have another one. Basically, what they did with the Apple Watch. So. Lots of things Apple could do. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, speaking of doing that with the Apple Watch, just a heads up for everyone that hasn't, you know, been tuning into the Apple news. The Apple Watch Series 3 is still around. It's starting at $199 still.
Don't buy that.
I agree. It's old. It's outdated. The screen is not as big as even the Series 6 or the SE, like not to mention the new 7. So
it's bad.
Don't there's buy no that. Mindfulness things too. People on our live stream can see mindfulness prompts for their reflex sessions. Like think about something you love, for example. And you know, that stuff is coming to fit.
Think about something you love and subscribe to the Engadget podcast. That could be the message that comes to your Apple Watch every day.
Action item. Actionable
action item. Sit and think and subscribe and leave a review. That's all. MacBook Pro redesign, anything like not much else we're expecting from Apple this year. What about the competition? Like I know we talked about Pixel 6, so like overall thoughts, Sherlyn, like are you expecting typically what happens is that we get the Pixel 6 and then come CES time Samsung is just desperate for attention. They're like there is another Galaxy coming, don't worry, we'll announce it in January or February. So it's like a mad rush for attention with all these companies.
I don't know if that is Samsung going thirsty for attention or if that's just their typical product release cycle. Who knows, they did move it a lot earlier.
It wasn't always around CES in like February, like it used to be later, so they got earlier.
It used to be like March, then it got earlier around. It used to be MWC.
MWC,
then it had their own separate event. Then I don't even want to chart that history. It's too much. It makes me feel old, you guys. I would say that in the market right now, look, what else is there for them to compete on, right? A lot of people in our chat, on Twitter, have been echoing the sentiment of like, yeah, these phones are boring. I'd rather be able to fold my phone in half. And look, I get that we're bored. I get it. But I think this boredom might be a sign that they're just really getting very good and there's not that much to do.
That's it. Don't be bored and ignorant of all the progress we've made. How about that? Because if you have a really fast phone in your pocket, like that's incredible. 10 years ago, I don't think we had a clue like it would get this good. So I guess it's a little boring, but also like to me, it's like it's almost like the fall of Rome type deal where it's like we have this giant civilization and we've like taken over the world. I'm just so bored. And then your empire falls apart. So, you know,
and they're like, we're excited now. Yeah. OK, cool.
Yeah. We've got a lot of things going on. So phones are not nearly the most important thing going on in the world right now. But it is nice that we've come to a point where you could buy a $400 phone that'll last you a couple of years, especially on the Android front. Even on the Apple front, the SE is still really good. So we've come to a really good place. Who knows like what the future will bring in terms of like hardware that excites you. Yeah, we're all a little spoiled. Like that's ultimately it.
Look, if you want to see the exciting stuff, you can always look to the brands out of Asia, like Oppo, Xiaomi.
Things you can never buy. Yeah.
Things we can't buy here, but some of those features do trickle out over here. Like, you know, I think under display cameras were one of the better ones was on the ZTE Axon 30, I believe. And we've seen them in Samsung. We haven't seen Apple adopt things like that. Apple tends to be a little slower. I think it tends to wait till it sees the
crazy telephotos in some of those. Like,
Space zoom. Jeez. But it's not that there aren't exciting features popping up in some cases, literally around the world in the smartphone industry. But here, it tends to take a little time for them to get adopted into, you know, our more mainstream phones.
Yep, we'll see a lot of that. How about until then, realize like how much we chase gadget news is like sort of an addiction. You know, strap on your Apple Watch, hit that mindfulness app, and just remind yourself that things are pretty good tech-wise, so it's okay. Just let Apple lull you to sleep. Let's move on to some other news. And I think the most hilarious thing I saw this week is Nintendo on Tuesday night was just like, hey, do you want Bluetooth audio on your Switch? Here's Bluetooth audio on your Switch. And everybody was like, they just tweeted it out. We've been begging for this for 4 years, and they're just like, hey, here's Bluetooth audio. Just hilarious. Update your Switches, people. I think the early reasoning from Nintendo why Bluetooth wasn't there from the beginning was that the Joy-Con controllers used Bluetooth, and they were worried about like interference and stuff with that. And the Joy-Cons had a lot of connection troubles too. So
yes,
I think it's taken Nintendo a while to implement this. I've tried it a bit. It seems fine. Pairing is kind of finicky. Like, it doesn't work exactly with every single pair of wireless headphones. I've noticed from some people, like, they say it kind of adds to their startup time from standby with the Switch because it has to, like, search for a headphone or something. So this is all just, like, getting started. But, hey, it is it's nice that Nintendo finally took this step. I have been buying $50 Bluetooth adapters to plug onto my Switch to get a little bit of that, because playing Switch with a wire, with a cable at home is fine. But when I was taking the subway or on airplanes or something, I was like, I don't want to like deal with cables. So I used to pay just for that. And then I'd lose those things because they're dongles and you lose them all the time. Now it's just kind of built in. So, hey, that's nice. Check it out, everybody. Shrillin, would you be using this? Because you have a Switch.
I would if I were, yeah, that use case that you said, right? If I were in an airplane or a bus or whatever and trying to play on the go. Yes, Bluetooth audio would be so helpful. Mm-hmm. And then in that case, too, the Joy-Cons don't need to be, you know, unplugged, so they can not use the Bluetooth connection
They didn't say if that was a requirement that the Joy-Cons have to stay plugged in. So I almost wonder if like Nintendo trapped like 5 engineers and put them in a closet for 4 years and like, just figure it out. Make sure it works, okay?
And then to get out, they were like, it works when it you works. Plug the Joy-Cons in. It works, it works, it works.
Let me out.
Let us out already.
Miyamoto-san, let me out. Yeah.
I'm so sick of this guy. Yeah.
So, yeah, you can save up to 10 Bluetooth devices, doesn't support microphone, and you can only pair your Switch with two controllers at once while using Bluetooth audio. So there's like...
So it looks like they don't have to be plugged in, but you have that limit.
You can only be two, because some people do like multiple controllers for like multiplayer stuff. If you ever do the tabletop thing, like in Nintendo commercials, yeah.
So if you have two controllers at once, can you pair two headphones?
I don't think
like two sets of headphones.
You can have a memory of multiple pairs, I believe, but you can't have them both at the same
time. Simultaneously stream, right? So if you have two Joy-Cons paired and you're playing a multiplayer game separately, two people, only one of you gets to hear the audio if you're also using Bluetooth audio.
Also, local wireless multiplayer games, I think because of the requirements there. So if you're playing like Mario Kart against somebody else with their Switch, you can't use wireless audio. So, you know, lots of limitations. It's a little clunky, like so many Nintendo like technical implementations. But hey, at least it's here. It's better than nothing, folks. So, you know, check it out.
Update your
Switch. It's a start. I just downloaded the game that was really well reviewed this week called Eastward. It is like from a Chinese studio. It is like a little RPG. And it looks really nice and cool. So I'm looking forward to like getting some wireless audio time with that. What else is going on? Sonos has a new Beam soundbar, the second-gen Beam. Is going to cost $449, so $50 more than the last one. But this one brings in Dolby Atmos support and support for other higher-end codecs. So it looks really cool. I have a Beam right now. I don't want to sound too privileged, but I have a Beam right now that is connected to my bedroom TV. So it is a perfectly capable soundbar for that. And I know a lot of people who have it in their living rooms too. Like, you know, it's a great soundbar. The Beam was good, but it was limited because it didn't have Atmos. It couldn't support like higher end codecs. So this new one can. With Atmos, you'll get like some sort of like, I assume it's going to be using upward firing speakers for that. I'm actually going to be getting this in to test in a week or two, so keep an eye out for my review. I'm really interested in seeing how it compares to the Sonos Arc, which is their most high-end sound bar right now. That thing normally costs $800, but Sonos also just increased the price of all their speakers by like 10%. So the Arc now costs $900. We're in a weird case where products are actually getting more expensive without actually changing. So, hey, folks, if you've been waiting to get a Sonos and you see something on sale or at a normal price at your favorite retailer, get that Sonos because prices are going up immediately. It's nuts. Do you have a soundbar of any kind, Trillin? Because I've been wondering. You've got your nice TV. You've got your Switch. What you doing for sound?
I don't have a soundbar, and I am intrigued by this
one. You should
get
it.
I think Sonos has good stuff. Yeah, I might. The problem, not problem, it's more like I've been getting by with the smart speakers that I have for music, and this is great for movies and TV and stuff. I've been using the internal speakers on the TV, which have been fine, honestly. I'm starting to feel like I need a beefier setup just to drown out my neighbors who will never stop making noise.
Yeah, exactly. So. That's the best revenge against your neighbors is loudspeakers. That's how civilization works, right? Everybody needs a soundbar. You don't have to spend $400 to get a good soundbar. You can actually get like a really good Vizio for $100 to $200 too. But I think for you, Sherlyn, the Sonos Beam would be nice because it also has built-in Alexa. So you can use it as a smart speaker. It supports, like, you know, you could throw audio to it. It'll make your movie sound better and stuff. Like, when you play games, it'll sound better, too. Like, speaker sound is important, folks. So,
oh, I can hear the animals chopping on Overcooked more clearly. Thanks.
Exactly.
I
mean, I'm really exactly. It's going to be great. Sound is important. So invest in that for your setup. The best thing about buying good speakers is that they will last a long time. And hopefully Sonos will keep these products around for a long time, too. There was some controversy when they started, like, killing off their older first-gen devices. Smart speakers, folks. Like, if you want a speaker that'll last forever, get yourself a real receiver and some actual wires and put that together, and that'll last forever. But for now, the Beam, the second-gen Beam, looks really good. Stay tuned to our full look at that. Sherlyn, you want to talk about Xiaomi doing something like other companies? I'm shocked.
So my favorite thing, sarcastically, this week was every other company deciding it had to announce a lot of things on Apple Week. I'm just like, y'all can chill because there's stuff going on. Xiaomi unveiled a bunch of phones actually this week, but in addition, it also launched its own smart glasses, which I think was more of a surprise than anything Apple unveiled at its event. So this basically, a lot of people, there's no real name for it. It's called Xiaomi Smart Glasses.
Are these real or are these just a render that somebody made?
I know, so they're real. We just don't know if there's a price or a launch date yet for these things. But here's what it's where it's different from Facebook or Ray-Ban's stories, right? A lot of people have been comparing them, and that's not actually the right comparison to make, I think, at this point, because it's actually very reminiscent of the Google Glass. It's much more like Google Glass in the sense that it's got a tiny display hovering on top of one of the lenses. It will show you messages, notifications, maybe even like navigation and text translation in front of your eye. It uses a micro LED display. It's got also some audio output, and there is a 5-megapixel camera on it. Those are all very Google Glass like features. I know that Facebook Stories has similar, but Facebook Stories, I believe, Dev, you've used them, I think, right? Like, they're more for capturing video.
Yeah, it's more for capturing. There's nothing on the lenses, so you can you can hear audio, you can capture video and photos, that's it.
Exactly. So the display here, again, similar to Google, is a monochrome solution. It's not a full color OLED or whatever, right? It's really just meant to show you text and simple diagrams, I believe.
Have we seen anybody wearing them? Are they showing them live in action?
We haven't had like hands on.
Not even hands on. Like, do they have videos of people actually using them? That's the main thing. If all I'm seeing are product renders, I'm like, it's like the Mad Max meme. That's a trap.
So they They have like their own like trailer video for it. I don't know if like, and there are people using it in that trailer video. You know, there's a man wearing it looking at three icons. There's a messages icon, a camera icon, and a maps icon.
Does it look real or pre-rendered? Like, that's the thing.
It looks like he's actually wearing it.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, does the screen on the glasses look real or pre-rendered? Because I can't tell with some of these. That's the thing.
It could be. I mean, who knows? They could have made up like a photoshopped a screen onto the thing. This is true.
We'll see, because we don't know when it's coming. We don't have pricing. Like, the less detail you have, the less real a product seems to me. But I guess, yeah, sure. At least it's not a complete doing exactly what Facebook is doing or other folks, right?
I mean, I will say that I have asked for a review in it, so I'm just waiting to hear back.
I'm sure they heard you. They're like, yeah, review unit, sure. Meanwhile, somebody's in the background, like, duct taping this thing together to finalize it. Yeah, I'm looking forward. We are going to have a lot more conversations around smart glasses, especially in Xiaomi, in China, and elsewhere. Like, yeah, this almost seems like we are seeing so many things about how technology is kind of, like, hurting our society and the social fabric, and now we're like, here's this new thing to be terrified of, everybody. We have not put any thought into how this works, but get ready, it's gonna be $599.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to, like, you know, crap all over a thing before I test it, because I don't know yet. They are saying that the smart glasses, I just went to check, is a concept, so no, it might not be coming out. There is a person using it and wearing it, but they don't have review devices.
I have a lot of concepts. So, I have so many concepts.
Oh, yeah. Look, Xiaomi, yeah, this is the thing that Xiaomi does, right? It's like first of all, it has like a thriving ecosystem of like these third-party startup-y, you know, Kickstarter-y companies that make really interesting things for the most part. But then Xiaomi itself has a hand in everything from like smart home devices. Like, I still so badly want the Xiaomi rice cooker for some reason.
There are so many other better rice cookers. Come on.
I know, Zojirushi and everything, but the Xiaomi one is cute. You know me and cute. But then, yes, yeah, so the...
I also know you and Rice Trillin. You want your perfect rice.
Also that.
You need a pressure cooker rice cooker. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, the point that I was trying to make is that, like, the smart glasses is definitely very within Xiaomi's wheelhouse, given its wheelhouse is pretty huge. And I'm not surprised. This is a very Xiaomi thing to do. Xiaomi also is one of the Chinese companies that has so far managed to stay away from what seems to be lots of, like, Chinese government influence. But we don't know. We never know. So it's very hard to be excited for something and yet remember that you still have to remain kind of skeptical of some of these things coming out of China, at least.
All right. Thank you for that. Let's move on to what we've been working on. I am currently testing the Dell XPS 15 OLED, the 2021 model. It is, I have it sitting right next to me. It is very nice. OLED screen on any laptop. Just give it to me. I'll eat that up. But the XPS 15, it is the same basic design that I reviewed last year. But hey, it's faster. The screen looks fantastic. It is overall, like, this is like one of the best 15-inch laptops you can get right now. So my review will be going up sometime next week, I think. It's very good. And I'm really interested in seeing how Apple ends up bringing the M1 to a 15-inch, or not 15, 16-inch MacBook Pro. Like, I really want to see what the next M1 is going to be, because sometimes you need more space. You know, I can work on a 13-inch laptop, especially if it's writing and stuff and basic image editing. But if you really want to, like, do a lot of stuff, you probably need a 15-inch laptop. I'm really digging this thing. It also it has an NVIDIA RTX 3050 Ti GPU. So the lowest end of the RTXs, you won't really be able to do ray tracing and stuff. But you could play a couple games on it. Like, that's nice. So yeah, keep an eye out for that. What have you been working on, Trillin?
Well, so I'm working on a lot. And
oh yeah, everything. You're working on everything. All the Apple.
I can't tell y'all. Y'all will probably know next week. So that's all I can, like, I don't even think I can say anything more than that, really.
We're also all prepping for an event next week.
Exactly.
This week was all Apple, iPhone, and Microsoft next week to be like, hey, we have stuff too, guys. You want to have a party? Want to come to our after party? Surface Surface party, everybody. There's going to be a new Surface event.
And normally Microsoft does this like the first week of October or in October. But this week it's like, no. We're good. We're ready. We're ready. We don't need the extra time. Y'all.
Also, they're going to be launching a whole new version of Windows and everything. So that's the thing, right? They need space to need hype cycle space. They also need to unveil the Surface laptop so people know you can buy a computer with Windows 11, right? It is all about the product cycle at this point. That's the main reason. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I like Surfaces. I hope they do something new and different. There are rumors about new Duos. Certainly the Surface Pro needs an updating. The Surface Book needs a serious update. So we'll see how that goes. And I've seen some rumors out of The Verge and some other places. It almost seems like the Surface Book is going to be getting a rotating screen or like a bendy screen, like a convertible screen, rather than the pop-out, which... That pop-out screen has been such a weight on the Surface Book because it made that laptop so thick and it made it hard for they could only fit the CPU on the screen size. So that really limited the amount of power they could put in the Surface Book. So it was a cool design, We've been complaining about it. Maybe they could reuse it down the line on something smaller where you don't need a ton of power, but I'm really interested in seeing what the next Surface Book is going to be as well. So stay tuned for that. We'll have live coverage. We'll be doing a live stream as well. That should be fun, but a lot of work for all of us. So if we sound a little tired or dead, that's why.
We'll be dead from now till November. That's
now
it.
Till November. We'll be dead till November. Let's move on to some of our pop culture picks. What do you got for me this week, Sherlyn?
So I'm keeping it real this week with some documentaries, y'all. Number one, the first, I have a pair of documentaries to recommend. And the first of them is Fake Famous on HBO Max. Have you heard of this one, Devendra?
Yeah,
so I saw it on HBO Max. Look, setting aside your thoughts on its skill as a documentary itself, right? Just put that aside. Let's not get... The content of it is actually very interesting. This is about how a project by former or maybe still a reporter, journalist who covered social media. He's running an experiment in this documentary, taking three... pretty much unknown people and trying to make them famous on social media and then gaining them a bunch of followers and all kinds of spawn con coming out of that. And it takes a look basically through this lens at the world of influencers and influencing, you know, how to win friends and influence people, I guess. Not only does it go,
how to buy friends and influencer people, basically.
Or more how to buy bots and get free shit.
Oh, exactly.
Really? Yeah.
That's actually it, because you're buying, the bots are just your fake friends. So yeah, that's it.
Exactly. So I think on the surface or before really watching it, you might make the assumption that it's just about how, people try to make themselves look good by going to all these shoot locations. But I do enjoy how the documentary takes pains to kind of spell out how much money goes into this, how much you reap, and then also some of the mental health tolls that it takes on the people that are involved. I surprisingly really enjoyed it. So you might too. The other documentary that I wanted to plug, and I think I've mentioned this before, is called My Name is Pauli Murray. This is a documentary about Pauli Murray. First disclaimer, produced by Betsy West and Julie Cohen. Betsy West was my professor in J school. Pauli Murray is a lawyer and activist who was, I'm going to just read off of Wikipedia right now, who was instrumental in arguing the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment that outlawed discrimination based on sex. But Murray was, I believe, someone that also influenced Ruth Bader Ginsburg a lot. She was also a pioneer in things about gender identity, about sexual orientation. I think she was one of the the documentary does take a look at her own sexual orientation, the possibility of all of that too, in a very nuanced way. Shout out also that Betsy West and Julie Cohen's latest documentary is about Julia Childs, that they've been kind of just bringing around. The reason I'm talking about Polly Marie now is because recently it got a release date on Prime Video. It will be available in limited release September 17th in, I believe, some theaters around the world. But then it'll be on Prime Video on October 1st. So you should check it out whenever that day comes. Cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Very cool.
You told me about your pick, Devendra, and I'm actually pretty stoked.
Yeah. So I wanted to, recommendation for you and the rest of the crew is Malignant, the next horror movie from James Wan. I love James Wan, this is a guy, he created Saw, he did Insidious, he did the Conjuring movies, which we both love, except Conjuring 3 sucked. There's a lot.
Insidious is also very good.
Insidious is good, and then those movies also like fell apart towards the end. Yeah. And he only started Saw. I don't believe he was like super involved in like all the sequels and everything. But this guy is super creative. He did it. He's coming off of doing a Fast and Furious, Fast and Furious 7. He did Aquaman, which was a ton of fun. I love him as a filmmaker, and this movie is him like attempting to start a new sort of horror franchise. Malignant. It's kind of funny because he basically deliberately made a B movie. Like, the script is rough. A lot of the acting is really rough. But it is a lot of like, and I think like it gets some emotional beats done really well. It's a lot of fun, even though it starts in a really like downer way. Like, it starts really heavy, and then it gets more and more crazy and bonkers as the movie goes on. So I'm not going to spoil anything about this movie except to say, if you're the sort of person that used to love digging up like B grade, B horror movies on VHS when you were just bored, when video stores existed, like if you're into B horror, I think you'll be really into this. I think somebody expecting like, man, this movie is just weird. It's just so weird. And the acting is bad. If you can't move past that,
like VHS, the actual series, the actual movie.
No, like actual, I mean like actual VHS, the technology. I know. Not just the series. Although VHS 2.
I did enjoy the VHS movie.
VHS 2 is a classic, and they have a new one coming out, like VHS 1994, that I'm really excited by. But VHS 2, everybody watch that too. Malignant is a lot of fun. But maybe, it is gruesome. It is crazy. And then it turns into like a crazy action movie at certain points too. I'm like, James Wan, you're just a crazy bastard and I love you for it. So shout out to Malignant. It is streaming now on HBO Max. You can see it in theaters, but just watch on HBO. I think it's better for that.
Be safe.
I have also been catching up on For All Mankind, which is an Apple TV Plus series I've been meaning to watch for a while, co-created by Ronald D. Moore, who did Battlestar Galactica, the reboot. I tried watching the show when it first launched, when Apple TV Plus launched, and it seemed fine. It is an alternate history space race story where the Russians, where the Soviet Union landed on the moon first. That is the very first scene of the first episode, and it's entirely about how NASA responds to that. I think I realized why I didn't move past that first episode a couple of years ago is that it's a little rough. Like, it takes forever. The first two episodes are just like, takes a while to get going. It's not until episode 3 where you start to see like what the show is doing. Let's just say, the Soviet Union starts making more advances, like getting the first, woman on the moon before the US. And meanwhile, NASA's like, oh man, We are bad. We got nothing. We don't even have women astronauts. So it is like a nice kickstart to NASA starting this whole, like, if we did redid the space race in a way where we're like, okay, women are going to be a part of it. People of color are going to be a part of it from the beginning. We're going to actually invest and build things and do things, not just to win, not just to be first, but to actually like develop something. This show kind of goes into that. If you are a Star Trek fan or a Battlestar fan or a sci-fi fan, and you've always wondered, like, how did this civilization get to this point, right? Like, where we could have starships and whatnot.
I mean, our civilization, yeah.
Yeah, any civilization, like humanity. I think this series is sort of that. Like, if they kept going for 5 or 6 seasons, I could easily see them being like, okay, we're going to leap forward in time 50 years. Because actually, even within season 1 so far, they jump forward 6 months, a couple of years at a time. So like time moves really quickly. It's a little bit like The Crown there. You could easily see them like building into being a spacefaring civilization by the end of season 4 or something. So I'm really excited to see where this goes. I love the writing, love the characters. A lot of actors I really like, including Joel Kinnaman, who... I love Joel. People... I think a lot of people dismiss him as like a model type guy because he's a very pretty man and he's a former model. But he's also, I like him as an actor. He plays as Edward Baldwin. He is, you know, one of the astronauts, like one of the core astronauts in this. But it has a bunch of people that I really like. Nate Cordry is in the show. Chris Bauer, who's like the nice gruff. He's a gruff guy. I first saw him on The Wire season 2, I think. Great cast, great writing. It takes a little while to get going, but I think once you get into episode 3, you will understand like why it's very good. So give it a shot. And if you tried it and gave up, I'd say just stick around for a little longer. I think you'll really dig that. Final thing I'll talk about is Deathloop, which came out this week. This is the Arkane Studios game. Arkane has made Dishonored, Prey, and this one specifically comes from Arkane Lyon. So the people who are really heavily involved in Dishonored 2, it is a loop-based game like so many these days where a day repeats itself. You play as a guy who's trying to break the loop by killing a ton of people, absorbing their powers. All the powers are also very reminiscent of things we saw in Dishonored, so I kind of love that. I love how they're basically reusing gameplay concepts from a series that should have been more popular in this thing. That's basically it. Meanwhile, you have a rival who's always trying to kill you, to basically stop you from breaking the loop. And the really cool thing is that there is like a multiplayer component to this, like sort of like the Dark Souls games. Somebody can invade your game, play this other assassin, and wipe you out to kill, like to stop your progress for the day. So that could be open to randos on the internet, friends on your friend list, or just like the computer, the AI could do it too. I have a lot of fun when I'm just like bored, like, okay, I'm going to go dick around in the game for a little while. I'm going to go ruin somebody's night, you know? So I really enjoy like going on, just like being Juliana, the rival assassin, like just like really stalking people. Cause you get an alert that you've been invaded. So all of a sudden, like that person playing, like, is just sweating. It's like, oh, she is here somewhere. I cannot escape this world until I kill her or like hack this thing and escape. So that immediately introduces dread into their night. And then a lot of it's just like trying to sneak up on them and kill them, or, you know, a lot of things. You can set traps for them. I sort of love that cat and mouse gameplay. So I'm really digging it. And the actual core game is really good. Jessica Condit over in Gadget did our full review and she really loved it as well. I think the actual story is good. I love Arkane. I love Arkane games. So play Prey, play the Dishonored series if you haven't. And if you have a PS5, check out Deathloop. It is a perfect video game.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at...
at Devendra on Twitter, and at my movie podcast, The Filmcast.
If you're a real friend and not a bot, you can find me on Twitter at Sherlyn Lowe. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.
We'd like to take a second to thank our sponsor, Mouser Electronics. Not only does Mouser stock the world's widest selection of semiconductors and electronic components, they also offer an original content series called Empowering Innovation Together. Each month, EIT takes a deep dive into the hottest tech trends, and this month the focus is on intelligent transportation systems. Check out podcasts, articles, infographics, videos, and more at mouser.com/empowering-innovation.